Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Everyone, thanks for listening to the Western Hunting Hub podcast. And in this episode, I have Ryan Smith from Hunt AZ, a new buddy of mine who's been a listener since day one. I've had him on before, and today he's just helping me tell my hunting story of my over-the-counter archery elk and bear that I just had hunt the other day. So here we are with me and Ryan just telling a hunting story. But before we get to that, just remember, if you would please go down to, if you're in Apple Podcasts, scroll down and give me a 5-star rating, please, and subscribe wherever you're listening. Leave a little nice review if you wouldn't mind. And if you've lost or listening to this on kind of an odd platform, we've moved, but it looks like everything's kind of followed where we're at, but we are now with Waypoint TV. So that's kind of a cool little move. Hoping to have them help me get some more guests and some more resources. So thanks for listening and enjoy. All right, Ryan, thanks for jumping on the podcast again. Who talking about hunting together, and we'll look. I was gone for a week and I didn't want to bring up to my wife that I was still planning on my hunt in Arizona. Like the day after I got home, it's still like happening. I just want to, there's appropriate times to bring things up. So I got to kind of work on that again. She knows, she told me it's fine. It was gone week and two weekends in Colorado. Elk and bear hunting were, they were testing for her. She was quite tested on a variety of things. So, you had mentioned kind of just do some text of, let's talk some stories together. I got some lessons learned and things that happened that are the ups and downs of hunting. And I threw a picture up on Instagram of me with a bull, but I just didn't feel right smiling next to it. So there's definitely a few things there that I can't. Yeah, I didn't know how to. Been through them before, but I didn't know how to deal with. So Ryan, thanks for coming on.
Not a problem, man.
So first off, before we get rolling, what do you got going with Hunt AZ lately? I've been seeing a few. You've been doing a lot.
Yeah, I've been busy. Elk season just kicked up here in Arizona. I think today would be day 7 into archery elk season. Just before that, we had some archery deer seasons going on. So I've just been super busy with the Instagram stuff, really not hunting much, not getting out in the field. I've been getting out a little bit scouting for, I've got a coos deer tag in November, and then I'm typically mule deer. And it worked out. I have a friend that has a rifle tag in that same unit. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there. We're figuring it all out.
Oh, good. Good, but, good.
Yeah. Been super busy. Just pictures of bulls and pictures of bucks coming through daily.
Oh, really? That's awesome. And we are kind of talking now there. We're kind of struggling size-wise due to drought and stuff. Did they kind of pick up a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know. Really what I've seen, I think it looks like a lot of the back ends are where the growth struggled. They have a lot of, like the fifths and sixths don't look too good. But I've seen a couple 400-inch bulls. And then a lot, not seen in person, but pictures of those being killed. And a few, I just got a text this morning, a hunt that I was actually supposed to be on. I was supposed to be on an elk hunt this week, but some stuff happened. I had a cousin get drawn for a moose tag in Colorado. So I adjusted my schedule and decided that I was going to do that this year instead of elk hunting.
That's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
But, you,
you just posted my buddy Cody Fish's monster bull.
Oh yeah, he shot that with the trad bow.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I shot with him at Alpha Bow Hunting this year and kind of gotten to know him a little bit through that, and I shot my trad bow there, so we've kind of been talking a little bit back and forth, so he's a good dude.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I was sweet to see a monster bull with a trad bow, and that is so funny because that dude can shoot, but then he can miss. But he was joking because he's shot with Aaron Snyder as well, and a few times, and he said that dude can shoot, but he doesn't post those on Instagram. He can miss too. So it's just, and it was funny. As soon as he got warmed up at Alpha, it's like, holy crap, dude, you can shoot. It was pretty sweet. And he just,
that's awesome.
Yeah, he'd shoot against us compound bows with his trad bow. So it was
really,
yeah. And he wouldn't do very well score wise, but he's like so devoted. Yeah. He's so devoted to, is like, I'm carrying my stick bow. I'm carrying it around, and this is what I'm going to do it with. So it's cool to see him just devoted to that. So he did two divisions, the trad division and the hunter division, men's open, just so he could run it some more. So it was fun.
It seems like the trad bow community has kind of been growing. I don't really, you know, I'm not into it. I don't do it. Actually, I haven't archery hunted in a few years, but there's a couple of trad bow guys that follow me and that I follow as well. And it's cool to see all the stuff they're doing, and the community's just growing bigger and bigger. It seems like more people are doing it.
Yeah. I down for the season. So I'm going to come back to it in the springtime. And it's definitely one of those things, like, I don't feel good about going hunting with it. So I'm just, I'm not going to, I would rather spend my time and practice with my bow. And that's what I did. I spent some time and brought my compound out to Colorado. My dad was supposed to come out. Sadly, he just couldn't do it. Just a ton of expense. One of those years of expenses like crazy, of vehicles having issues and whole AC replacements in the house. Just expensive stuff. So he made a wise decision in not going. But we 2 years ago, we had an amazing time in the field, and he got hooked where we just brought in bull after bull after bull, and he ended up sticking one, and it was a great hunt. So he got addicted, but just could not make that hunt this year, and said, well, you gotta go. You still should go, because I don't know how many more years I got of before there's another kid coming around and kind of not messing that up, I should say, but, you know, needing to raise another little kid. So you need to try and get it done, and while it worked out. So,
yeah. So that hunt that he killed a bull on, that was what, 2019, you said?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It was just a nice little reghorn bull. So, but we had 10 bulls that year within 30 yards. And I think we had, we watched a couple of really nice big 6 points, but yeah, so he just stuck a little bull and that was we had 10 bulls within 30 yards that year, and had, we definitely don't get the bulls like you guys do down there. We don't, Colorado struggles to get the beam length.
Yeah.
Not Arizona bulls, not New Mexico bulls.
Right.
But there was a couple, the one specifically that we watched, and we called in four of his satellites, just an amazing year. And he stuck one of those and had,
you can definitely find good bulls in Colorado for sure. It's just, I think a lot of Colorado and I hunt more east of where, at least where you used to live. I don't know where you hunted this year, but, I hunt some good bulls, but pretty typical, nothing great, but it also gets hammered with hunters. I mean, the hunting pressure in Colorado, everybody, it's like you've said before, it's a destination place. So everybody's coming there. I have buddies that were hunted there this year from New York, And then, like I said, I kind of hunt further east, further south, and it looks like a Dallas Cowboys parking lot, man. All the Texas license plates are everywhere.
Well, and like a Broncos parking lot, because a lot of those guys use their Broncos hats for orange, even though it's like, it's not really blaze orange. But anyway, I was surprised, though. I know the point creep was like more than a point creep. It was points creep this year in Colorado, and seeing those numbers jump double, more than one point. And the number of applications, you see that across the nation of multiple people doing that. But I had less pressure this year in my areas. And it it was pretty sweet. My first couple days I spent just kind of going and checking my usual little areas that are not too much of a hike in. I was hunting with my buddy who is not really in the shape to be doing that, but he knows elk hunting, so, and we just have a heck of a time. So definitely fun hunting with him. But we checked out our usual spots, and I think what happened, and I chatted with the game warden a little bit, things that happened is there just in a few of those areas that it was kind of rough hunting for a little while. There's big bulls and good bulls around in there, but it got so packed with people and people were not having success that finally people said, screw it, I'm going to move on to something else. And I think I caught the year when they said, I'm going to try somewhere else. Or it's I don't even know. It wasn't too bad. There wasn't as many campers in that main area. And we had, I had a bull come in without me really knowing it on the kind of one of our first little hunts. I dropped down in this little bowl, cause I had heard a bugle in there, seen a cow kind of from the opposite ridge, dropped down in there, tried to get my wind right, and then didn't realize how kind of thick it was. And I ended up just in this thick stuff that I could not really navigate through very well and get any shooting lanes. And my buddy watched from a distance, and he said at one point he was coming in, and he was coming in hot and fast, and he left hot and fast, like the full on throw his head back
and just go.
So I don't know what point in there he came in. The wind was perfect the whole time, so I don't know kind of what happened there, but it was one of those. I've pushed myself to be a little bit more aggressive at times and to get in close, but this time it actually was probably too aggressive. I'm feeling like I need to have some aggression, but then I need to be patient. So be aggressive and get into a certain range, and then just be patient and wait for things to happen. Because it was the morning, they were probably just feeding around in that thick stuff and ready to move on to wherever. So I probably
with that aggression, I've learned that, like, I over the last couple of years, I learned I was being aggressive, but too aggressive from too far.
Right.
And then I think last year I tightened up where I wouldn't get aggressive until I got into that 100 yard range kind of deal, that 100-150.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get aggressive and make that bull nervous, where all years before I hear a bull and I start bugling or whatever I'm doing, and I'm just driving them away. I could never catch up with them. Well, last year I learned aggression was nice as long as you're in tight on them.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's another story.
Yeah. So that was just a real quick little morning hunt, and backed out, and I got a text from a buddy. Not even really a buddy. I don't even know him. We pulled his vehicle out of my little honey hole that I got. He got stuck in their little area that I'm hunting. So I said, hey, let's trade numbers so we can coordinate, let each other know. It's not that huge of an area. It's like you're hunting 1,000 acres to 2,000 acres of this little chunk. So it's not huge, and it's got one entrance into it, so you know who's in there. So I tried to get each other's number, and we didn't. Been kind of just coordinating, and he was the only one going in there, and he filled his tag right away, shot a little reg horn, and he lost the head and one of his meat bags of probably the good stuff or something like that all to a bear. So
no way.
Yeah. Yeah. He texted me and asked me to look for it. And I said, hey, show me a waypoint of where you lost it. But he never did. Somewhere on 2000 acres, there's a head.
Like, well, dead head out there.
Yeah. So that was a bummer. But especially after the pack out that I saw kind of some of the signs of where he was at. And I think that was a rough pack out for come home with 3/4. It's like shooting a cow way too far in. Just,
yeah
you can do it a lot closer than that. So, yeah. So he coordinated. He was the only one in there. He was out by Sunday. My whole trip was Saturday to the following Monday. So like a full week and 2 weekends, basically.
And nice, right.
So lots of time, which was really great. I took Jim Shockey's advice full on and wanted to just be patient and just enjoy the time, not be in a rush. Let's just figure it out and do what I need to do in the field and be a respond to the whatever I see. Not let me just like, I gotta get in there. So
yeah,
that's why I was checking out those other spots to begin with. Then I was going to go into my good spot. And because he had said he was done in there, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, the next day I'm going to go on. So Monday, that was my pack in day. Everything hit the fan at home. My dog was having issues and my wife had to run the dog to the vet, like ER. So I had that happen. My wife is not feeling well. Have a 3-year-old that was, they're having to wait in the ER parking lot for all that. So there was a bunch of compounding things just at home that just were added stresses. And then a little drama with her family, which added to that, which was very irritating. So I had to stay within cell range until 4 o'clock, just being on the phone, trying to deal with that, trying to get her some help she needed, figure out what to do. So Monday, I was like, I can't get in there, which is an hour drive from where I was hanging out, and then a half hour 4-wheeler ride, and then that's the trailhead. So I had a pretty rough hike in. It's not very far, about 1.5 miles before I just take my bow out of the bow slicker and I kind of just get situated to start hunting. So not too terrible far, but that's the start of it. So I set my pack down after doing that little bit of hike and get my bow ready, just get my release in my hand and all that sort of stuff. And then as soon as I did that, bull bugles above me. The timing is just beautiful.
Perfect timing. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is not the only time I've had this. I'm hiking into the bottom of this drainage. I'm in the bottom of this drainage. And the wind's fine because it's in the evening and it's starting to drop.
Yeah.
And so the bulls are above me, but I have this every time that I walk into that place. I get those bulls in the evening bugling on the way in above me, and they just sort of creep up and creep up and creep up, and then they shut up and are gone. So I've never been able to even see those bulls on that ridge when I don't know what I'm doing wrong there, but maybe it's just coming from below them. They don't have any care, or they kind of know hunters come from that
from spot. The bottom.
So I don't know. It is fine. I got within range of a spike, and we can't shoot spikes obviously here. I think there was about 2 bulls in there somewhere that were kind of just kind of going back and forth, but I think that's the bulls I found the next day. So anyway, got in there just at that last light. Made it to my camp just past dark, which is, I don't know, 3 miles in or so, and set that up. It was hot. It was really, really warm. It was kind of miserable at night to sleep. I couldn't even like lay in my bag without sweating, and you didn't want to have sleep on top of it because then it was almost too cold. So it was just this weird temperature of, I hated it. I didn't sleep.
Yeah, that uncomfortable point where you're getting no sleep, but you're getting any sleep you do get's not good sleep.
Yeah, you guys have no idea how that is down there in the desert with the heat. So
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't know anything about the heat, right?
No.
No, it's been crazy. I mean, we're in the middle of September and it was 105.
Oh my gosh. A
couple days ago. I mean, it was 100 yesterday and today.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And then fortunately enough, this year we got a lot of rain, which was nice, but it made it uncharacteristically humid, you know, so we're not used to that here.
I mean, but yes, honey, but then you think about the kids in school and playing football right now, and they're trying to play that in pads and full gear. You're gonna have kids pass out. It's dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I didn't really set an alarm. I don't really need to set an alarm too much. I just kind of woke up and it's like
that internal clock kicks in.
Yeah. 6:30 and it's right where I'm camping. I don't have to wake up before light. I just need to wake up and as soon as I stand up, I can start glassing and I usually see bulls from that spot. Every time I'm in there, I step up or I get out of bed, stand up, kind of step out of the trees because I put my camp in some oak brush just to hide it a little bit, and I see bulls. Usually there's some sort of bull somewhere, and I wanted to kind of hit my closer ridges first, and so I hiked about just eighth of a mile, or it's like that eighth of a mile, I don't know, let's just say like 400 yards whatever that is. So saw these two little bulls down the valley that I had just hiked up, little 4-point and then just a pretty little 5x5, just small, but just a little bull. They were kind of just hanging out by themselves, feeding. They actually started sparring just a little bit, that gentle early season rattle, put their antlers together and kind of test each other and then back to feeding. I was like,
right,
I'm getting on these bulls. I'm going to figure out how to get on them. The wind is going down at them, but they're on the one side. So I figure I'm going to drop down into the darker timber, and they're on drop down to the 10. That wind, as long as they stay somewhat on that side, even if it's 20 yards up on that south facing slope, I'll be good. So drop down, got into that timber there, and I did exactly what I wanted to and learned from the previous time, was get within 100 yards. And then just be patient and just call and do some things. Cause I knew they were not hot and heavy looking for cows. They're just two bachelors hanging out. So thought curiosity is probably my thing I need to do with them. An opportunity of there's a cow over here that they would be willing to check out. So I sat up. I did have my Ultimate Predator decoy on. Because that's been my issue in previous years, is that hang up zone where they just stop at that 50 yards and I just need them to come a little closer. So here's my battle with that. I kept thinking about this. Do I throw the decoy on and it helps them get through that little hang up area?
That window, yes.
Yeah. Or if I throw it on, am I giving away my location? And then I don't ever have an opportunity for that 10 yard shot that they're just walking by me. So
I've never hunted with one of those. So have you ever heard of Chris Rowe from Rowe Hunting Resources? He explains that really well about, he calls it the bedroom, you know, and it's about you're calling somebody from down a hallway and, you're trying, you know, somebody's going to walk around trying to find out where you are and they're going to stop at each doorway. You just have to try to set yourself up to figure out where that doorway is going to be and have that elk step into that doorway for you. So, I don't know, with the decoy, that's a tough call. I've never really used them. I've kind of had questions about them and I've second guessed them. So I haven't really got into them, but
yeah,
I don't know.
In this scenario, it worked, but I could see it going either way. Honestly, no. And that's a really good analogy, actually, because that's I really enjoyed listening to him lately on the whole drive down there and way back. I was listening to some of his stuff. I got down. I dropped down as low as I could and was hoping with the angle at which they'd be coming, they may just make their way kind of up into the timber a little bit and traverse towards me. Thought that's maybe the way they're going to come. So I just hang out there. It's probably 10 minutes, just some light cow calling, nothing crazy. Maybe a little bugle in there, I think. I can't remember, but just mild calling. And never saw them at all. Had a bunch of cattle in the area above me, so breaking sticks and doing all that. So that throws you off. Didn't know what was above me exactly, but yeah. Pretty sure there were cattle. And then I see them coming directly below me. So the little one is first. He drops down absolutely to the bottom, and that's when he caught my wind. He backed up and just kind of hung out there at, I don't know, that was probably like 60 yards or so. As they dropped down, and as soon as they kind of spooked a little bit, I had bolted in there and knew that they were not focused on like looking back, but they were just, oh, what happened? What happened? I smelt something. The other guys, what'd you do? What'd you do? I didn't smell.
How late in the morning is this? Are you fighting thermals or anything yet? Are you worried about thermals going up to them? Or are you not that late in the morning yet at this point?
No, this is like 8 o'clock.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He kind of spooks. I drop down to get a little closer. And again, just I'm trying to think about that. Those thermals are going down. So I can't figure out I can't swing around on their same side because it's the open face of the hill. I'll just be in the wide open. And so I dropped down a little closer, and I bet there was another way to do this, but it worked out. Had, and probably hang up the one little bull. He ended up barking at me and said, forget this, I'm out. And eventually he kind of went back and forth and he left. The bigger one, which was great, never did win me. And he just kept going back and forth and back and forth. And I just totally kept playing a little cat and mouse for 10 minutes. It was staring at me through kind of the leaves and the trees and the brush there at 50 yards, something like that.
He knows he should be able to see you now, but he can't.
But I had that decoy on there. So I think he saw something and I think that's what kept his attention. It's like, there's a cow there. And I started then getting actually I heard some mews behind me up the hill. So I had more real life decoys up there.
Yeah. I could get a little help there.
Yeah. So that was like perfect. John at me at 10 yards above the, so I don't know what was coming, but heard a couple little mews and had a, so he kind of was going back and forth. And when he went through some thicker brush, I dropped down another 5-10 yards, and he made his way back up a hill just a little bit in his one of his little decision making things of figuring what he wanted to do. And he was at 40 yards, perfectly broadside, drew back, and right when he was in the brush, kind of before he was broadside, and he stopped in the opening and thumped him. So I never did see the arrow path, and that's the one thing that's making me wonder about some things that happened afterwards. But it was like, you hear that thud, like a good sound of, it sounded like a rib breaking. And
yeah,
actually that's what it was probably, but hear that rib break and then him just turning and wheeling and going and just like, ouch, ouch, I'm hurt. And he was gone. So he probably ran 100 yards before he kind of went out of sight, and I gave her 45 minutes or so, chilled out for a little bit, tried to drink some coffee. But he's on the hot side of the mountain is where he went, on that south facing slope. So I thought, all right, it's 85 today, gonna be 85, and I'm gonna give him the 45 minutes because that was a good shot, felt good, and give him that time on that hillside.
Right.
So head over, get that first blood. First blood was good. Started following it, and I knew where the last time I saw him was, but I just wanted to follow the blood just for sure. Cause I get ahead of myself sometimes, and then the last point I saw him may not be the last spot I find blood. It may be 20 yards ahead of that or behind it. So it's
A lot of people make that mistake too, and they get to, they let emotions take over, and they get excited, and they rush. They just rush the process. Just stick to the process, and it'll work out.
Yeah, finding blood is not easy. That is
no,
it is hard. It is really hard, and being really slow and trying to tune your eyes into looking for that blood is hard. So I followed that. I get around this little finger ridge where it's all this serviceberry oak brush kind of hillside with, but it's pretty open yet. And he jumps up at 66 yards is what he was. I'm like, oh frick, that was not what I was expecting.
So at this point you're expecting him to be dead, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're thinking you had a well placed shot.
Oh yeah. Yep. So I fumble like a range, this 66 yards, turn my dial to 66, draw back, and he's walking away, and that was a desperation send an arrow kind of thing. It's just, that was stupid. But I at that point it's like, why did I dial? It's at 66 yards. I have a HHA sight that is a 4-pin, so it's my 20, 30, 40, 50, and then anything past that I like to dial, but I don't really shoot a ton past that. But if I like, or 60, I'm even good. Last year I shot my bullet 60 and I didn't touch my dial because you can just put the 50 on his back, good to go.
Right.
But so that was just in the heat of the moment of 66 yards, that's a ways, I need to dial that in. But I didn't. Coming out, he was facing. So
okay,
away, blood coming out, and that was an exit wound. And then when he stopped broadside for me, and I could see, he had a good entrance hole, like where I hit him, maybe a touch back, but it was lung in that area.
Yeah,
and it ended up actually being the fourth rib from the back. So I got pictures of it. I'm not posting those at all just because they're gruesome. Yeah. But where I shot, I was like, that'd be fine. I'd do that again. I'd rather shoot a little further forward, but it's fine.
But you're in the ribs, so you should be in the lungs. You should be good to go.
Yeah. So that arrow hit and then jetted backwards. And I don't know how or what happened with that. And I don't even think there was... I don't think I hit a branch. It was clear. And even looking at it later, it was clear. So I don't know if I hit a branch. I have seen a few things on my bow, or a few arrows in the last week or two before I went, where I had a couple like almost corkscrew through the air. But I thought, because I've had an issue lately of some fletchings not sticking, and I don't know what's happening with that. So, but I use my old arrows, not my new ones that were freshly fletched. So I really don't know what happened. If I don't think it would have corkscrewed through the air or had hit something, because when that happens, I usually can see it because that arrow is actually moving a little slower. So you got just a little bit of a, holy crap, what just happened there? That thing was moving funny. So I don't think that was the case. But
do you use expandable broadheads or fixed blades?
I use both, but in this situation, that was a G5 Montech, and those are my go-to for elk.
That's my go-to for really any archery that I'm doing. But
yeah, and I have Rage Tripans. I really really like those for just because they are the thicker. Thicker blade, and I have one of the, I carry those also for that exact situation, something that's not 20 yards and they're standing broadside. I didn't use it. So, cause I watched my buddy plug some deer in the holes that those things put in there. But I know on elk, it's just, it's a little risky for me, so I don't want to do it. But,
that's what I was wondering, is if maybe like one of the sides of your broadhead didn't deploy, but if you're using a fixed blade, that negates that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it did something funky. So anyway, that he jumped up and didn't get another arrow in him. So off he went, just around the up the next finger ridge, which these little finger ridges are 100 yards apart, so they're not real big. So I back off. Okay, let me go get my I went and got my camp and thought, all right, he's gonna be dead. Let me go up to cell service, text my buddies that were gonna be my help for a pack out. Just give them a heads up what's going on. Grab my camp and I'm gonna actually get out of here because it's gonna be dead. I know I got him. And so yeah. I did that. I just chilled out. So 2 hours later, hike back down there with all my crap, walk up to that kind of that last spot, ready to roll, creeping in there. Cause I know I was like, he could be still bedded here and I got to stick another arrow in him. So follow that up to that last spot that I saw him, and probably 20, 30 yards from the last spot I saw him, I look up the hill and he's bedded under a tree, just kind of, he's hurting, mouth open. Almost looked like he was chewing on his cud a little bit, but could have been, you know, choking on some stuff.
Yeah.
So he's laying
probably
there.
Doing that, had that heavy breathing.
Yeah.
You can see him like panting. Yeah.
Laying there at 20 yards, and I'm going to, best thing I had there was just right at his neck. Like 20 yards, one arrow in his neck right there. It'll be good. Really easy shot. Draw back, and I release the arrow, and my dial was still on 66 yards.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That right there was the epitome of the worst part of that whole deal, because that was the spot I could have corrected everything. And I had everything I was doing right, and this is where I just sunk down low, just like, you got to be kidding me. I was playing a game right. I was doing everything right. There's so many spots for error, and that was one of those spots for error that I lost. So
yeah,
that bothered me big time.
Yeah, and that up as a loss for yeah. Sure.
So he jumped up and kind of moseyed up the hill, and he's standing up there. And I was like, I don't know where you are. That's 50. All right. That looks like 50. Standing there broadside, and one over his back again, which must have been 30. I don't know. It's just that open country is so hard sometimes to do a, if I don't know the range, I am almost worthless sometimes. Man, I got to know the range. Because I just second guess it too many times.
Yeah.
So, and that's what bothers me is like, I'm a good shot. I feel like I'm a good shot. I'm not the best, but I feel like I could do pretty well against a lot of people. And I usually do in my little bit of my shooting competitions. I'm usually in that top 5 to 10 out of the group. So, but when I'm in front of an animal, oh man, it's a different story. there's so much stuff I got to think of so quick. But yeah, so he jumped up and I get that last one over his back and I run up to where he was. I saw him last, so I can see him making his way up the other little finger ridge, and he's just walking. And I can see the shiny broadhead sticking out that hind quarter. So I was like, okay, it's still in him. So that whole thing.
Oh, so the arrow's still very deep inside of him.
Yeah, the whole length of it.
Yeah.
Because I never found that.
And then you're big enough, you're shooting full-length arrows, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's...
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, he makes his way right up there, and he disappears behind just a small little piece of oak brush, and is like, okay, where'd you go now? Where did you go now? And I lost him from there. So I backed off another 2 hours and said, all right, if he's dead now, after all that, then I don't want him sitting here any longer. And make my way up to that spot, and I looked for the rest of the day. Looked and looked and looked and looked, and it was hot, getting really hot, and had no idea where he was at. I grid searched that whole thing. My Onyx just looks like my tracks are just going everywhere. And made it to the next finger ridge, thought is gonna, he only went 50 to 100 yards every time I bumped him. So it's like he can't be far. He just tipped over. All this movement just made him tip over and he was done. So I that night I just went back to camp and I set my camp back up, even though I had packed it all up. But went in the next day back into that area and looked and looked again. It got even hotter that day. So between naps and looking for birds, seeing some vultures, started seeing some ravens, and I was like, I don't know where you guys are going. It wasn't a nice little tornado of birds above it. So I couldn't tell where they were going. But I was like, okay, I'm seeing birds. Thing's dead. I saw a bear track headed kind of down the ridge to where I was looking. And, I looked everywhere. I looked all over trying to reason where the heck he went. And that day, whoops, hurt my dog. but anyway, yeah, followed every little possible route that thing would have taken out looking at, cause it was leaving good blood on almost the whole way. Like I could find injury on both sides, losing a lot of blood. And it's a liver shot too. So liver and ended up being one lung. So next day, I shot it on Tuesday morning. Tuesday looked all day. Wednesday looked all day. Thursday morning, I said, forget it. I'm going to give this whole place a break. I'm hiking out. And on the hike out, he's dead in the trail on the way out.
And really?
I couldn't believe it. A mile from where I saw him last.
Wow.
Yeah, so he went a mile, and I couldn't believe that. I was not expecting him to be that way. It was all downhill, but he also had walked uphill after he was shot for a while.
So did you literally just kind of stumble upon him?
Yeah. Yeah. Like on the trail, there's an old Forest Service gate right before, kind of this hike up, and I can tell he jumped that gate and that was the end of it. Like, oh gosh, I can't jump, and piled up right at the bottom in a nice, cool little creek bottom. He was getting closer and closer and closer to the trailhead every time I jumped him. And where he died was a half mile from my four wheeler. So it was just getting closer and closer. And that was where it's like, you gotta be kidding me. If I was just given up or something or walked out that, or decided to just walk out that day after I'd packed my camp up, I would have ran right into him and he'd be down there. So it's just so many shoulda, coulda, woulda's that I don't.
How was the meat? Now you're talking, he's probably been dead 2 days. Yeah.
Yeah. So the front quarter was ripped up by a bear. There was 4 or 5 piles of bear crap around. Hind end was eaten out. Guts were kind of there. So I dug into the backstrap. Everything looked, not everything looked okay. It looked like it had the trauma below the skin level. But it wasn't trauma. I cut into the backstrap and gave everything a sniff. There was some of it that was more gag worthy than other, but just about everything. Everything did have a tint to it that was,
bummer.
Yeah, pretty rough. So it was an absolute no go. So what I did then was I videotaped everything and I flipped the bullet around. I showed the entrance. I showed the exit. I dissected into it. My arrow wasn't there then, which is odd. So he pulled it out or got it caught on a branch somewhere and it got pulled out. But he got hit in the lung and then it went back somewhere. And so videotaped out every quarter, and figured out, or so just in case the game warden wants me to pull out rotten meat, hike it out. Okay, just fine. I'll do that. But let me get some video evidence of what's going on here, because it's in the trail and the muzzleloader hunters that are going to come in, or the next archer that's coming in, is they're going to see it, and they're going to see a headless bull here. So that just looks like some poacher came in and shot this or didn't want to pack it out. So I really did everything I could, checked every single quarter, cut into them all, and gave them all a sniff. And it was, I gagged a few times. So, yeah, that was enough to see that. So that's where the picture came in, where right as I found that, I just like, I wanted a picture, but it was like a, I don't really feel like I can smile right now.
I was going to say, I looked at your picture. I'm actually looking at it now. I pulled it up on the phone, and you look everything less than thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's just that bittersweet. I found it, but
like it brings a closure to it.
Yeah.
But it's not the happy closure that you were hoping for.
Yeah. And so I didn't tell anybody this. I was thinking about it over and over and over again over those 2 days. So this roller coaster of emotions of, I am now, am I recovering a bull that the meat is good? Am I moving on and continue to hunt? Do I punch my tag right now? Am I done? I just spent $700 on a tag, and I walked home with a little set of 5-point antlers. I really wanted some meat. I really like sharing that. I had some few folks home really excited about me bringing home some meat for that possibility. So that was going through my mind, and all of the, I was just down on myself for not messing with my dial, or for messing with my dial. I'm down on myself for one little, if a lot of new hunters are wanting to jump into archery, just because a lot of those folks are maybe if the guns are nervous about the guns. And so archery is kind of that thing, but man, there's so many things that can happen, with archery that I feel like there's more room for error.
Yeah.
At times. So, be like someone like me who's been shooting a bow a long time, ready to just take that $2,000 worth of equipment and chuck it in the weeds and just be so upset of, you got to be kidding me. I don't even feel like I should be bow hunting. It just, and I've lost other animals, and it gets really frustrating, really frustrating. Like, you got to be kidding me. What did I do wrong this time?
And it eats you up for a while. It's not like you get over it in a day. You sit there and you play that over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So
I told that story at work, and I started shaking a little bit. And just now, as I'm kind of got that little nervous, like kind of chilly, cold shake. Mm-hmm. That same thing I'm feeling right now as I'm telling that story, just because it bothers me, bothers the crap out of me that went through those 2 days of kind of the ups and downs. So, man, I just, the people that are kind of getting into this world of, well, I'd like my own meat, they don't know this part, that this crap happens, and you better be ready. You better be absolutely ready. I had this conversation yesterday with a brand new hunter. She just shot her first deer this morning on her birthday, which is pretty cool. And biggest worry is from her was, what if I don't put it down right away? What if I don't put it down right away? And I'm telling her, like, I'm just here. You're the tag holder. I can't make that follow-up shot legally. You have to. And so just really trying to lay out this is the reality of what we're doing. We're killing something, and there's no fluff around it. So yeah, it definitely made me think about that, all those new hunters. So anyway, cut the head off or skinned out the head, and had a simple little pack out, if you call it that. And, so pulled that out, but needed a break from that and hung out with some friends and decided, all right, next day. Oh no, I drove out, called the game warden right away. And
I was going to ask you how you approached that. Did you report it so he wasn't getting, or he knew how to address phone calls that were coming in about it?
Yeah.
And they're going to
head there. There was a gate, And I took a, I had my pen from, I always have a pen with my, in my kill kit, but there's, I took a piece of gauze, the wrapper from the gauze. That was the only thing that I could write on. And I wrote a note right there saying, "Hey, there's a dead bull at the bottom of the hill here. That's mine. I shot it on Tuesday, found it on Thursday, did everything I could. I'm sorry that you have to see this thing here. Did everything I could. I have reported it." Something to that effect. So I wrote a note too, because somebody coming up on a dead bull suddenly gonna wonder what the heck's going on. So yeah, wrote the note, drove up top of the hill, got cell service, called him, left him a message, and then ran into him on the way out. So that was even more of a bonus there. And I got to stop and chat with him and tell him the story. And he was more than understanding of everything that happened there. Of, and he's an archery hunter. I know it. And so he, that's a nice thing. It's like, I worked in that area. I know the game wardens. So, and I know, so I was, I had their numbers on my phone and was able to talk to him a little bit. And, so he knew me, he kind of knows my, my story and was able to tell him the truth. And he didn't even ask for the pictures or video or anything like that, but I told him and I said, "It's there, probably going to get some calls on it." So, and I showed him the bull, showed him my tag and moved on. So,
yeah.
But, and he said, "Well, go shoot a bear in there." And, off of it. I was like, "Okay, sounds good." Well, I gave it that a break and got in there the next day. Didn't even get there at light. Just kind of got there at, and it was like 7:30. And I said, I'm in it for the long haul. I'm sitting here all day long until
something's coming to that big old stinky bull now.
Yeah. Yeah. There's bear crap all over it. So I am going to shoot. There's going to be something here and I'm just going to wait. I got nothing going on. Just wait. So, 20 minutes later, bear comes out.
20 minutes. That's all it took. Huh?
20 minutes. Bear comes out and I was like, "Okay, let me watch you for a little bit." Went down to get a drink, walked over to the carcass and started feeding. I was like, "You got any cubs with you?" "No." "All right." And I could tell, she's like, "You're not a big bear, but you're a bear. And I've been wanting some bear meat really bad."
Yeah.
So I'm going to, "Okay, you're mine." So I made that decision, took her, and it was a sow. But there's, she wasn't accompanied by any cubs. So
does Colorado have, like sow limits per unit? Do they have a sow harvest limit? So down here, so the unit I hunt bears here, they're allowed to take one sow. Once one sow is taken, the unit shuts down. Bear hunting is closed.
Oh, sure. No.
And, yeah. So, I mean, that's something that a lot of people really pay, the avid bear hunters, I guess, really pay attention for. The guy that's going out that's never hunted bears before shoots the first bear they see. And, you know, there's times where, unfortunately, they don't take the veteran move and pay attention and look for cubs and whatnot. But
yeah,
so some of these units get shut down in the first week of being open.
Oh, geez.
Yeah,
no, we don't have that. There's always, in general, no, we don't. It's an either sex tag and it's, that one was a leftover that I pulled off, but I think we have some like archery over the counter of some sort, but the bear numbers are so high that they just, I think actually they've done some kills in that area where the CPW goes in and they do some removal.
And they have that new thing. I think it's only a couple years new, last year, maybe the year before, where you can pick up like an OTC bear tag for like $100 or something and carry that.
Yeah. So all the bear tags are all $100 and that's why I bought it. But a bear with my rifle tags in that for September. And so I was more conservative. I really want some bear meat, really want some, my bear fat is kind of, and grease that I made is not really any good anymore, and I didn't do it right the first time, so I really want to mess around with that because I've been having fun cooking with that. But so it was just a rifle tag. And
okay,
but I have been using these Barnes all copper 180 grain in my 30-06, and I am so impressed with them. Like, they have dropped every single thing, either in its tracks or a mountain goat went 5 yards and I plugged him in and he dropped. But anywhere from elk to mountain goat to bear, multiple bears with these rounds, oh my gosh, they just drop. I finally have found the round that I really, really like hunting with. So
yeah,
that little bear is only 175 pounds or so. Her teeth had some decent wear to them, so I'm really interested. We get to find out how old they are because they take a tooth from it. So I'll know next year. It takes about a year for that data to come out, but
right,
we'll know how old it is. So definitely not my biggest bear. I've got one really good sized bear and not my smallest bear. So I've got, that'd be right in the middle, a really thick black, pretty coat. And
yeah, she's a pretty looking bear. She's got a good color.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the hunt. I ended up be able to leave. My dog is dragging my Exo Mountain Gear pack across the floor just because I haven't washed it yet.
Oh.
It's like, you are not chewing on that at all. But yeah, so I was able to get some meat out of the deal, and that was kind of the big thing. I do have 5 deer tags here in South Dakota and a couple antelope, and I'll have that tag down. But I like the diversity of it. I really, really like deer meat, and elk would have been great, but
yeah, just throw something different in the mix.
Yeah. Yeah. Antelope's been my kind of go-to lately. Really, really into antelope lately.
See, I've never hunted antelope. I think I've maybe eaten antelope one time. I think that's my 2022 goals is I'm going to attempt to like travel, take a week or two and travel a few states and hunt antelope.
Oh, nice.
Next year. Yeah.
Nice. Well, then what you need to do is go buy a point for South Dakota. If I know this is a ways to come for an antelope, but you can get a lot of tag or just about any tag with 1 or 2 points or 3 points.
Okay. So,
yeah. And you can buy.
I'm not worried about the distance over the counter.
Sweet. Sweet. Yeah. Any points in South Dakota, you can just about buy them all up till like December 15th or something like that.
And okay. I'm going to look into that.
$10 a piece and you don't have to buy a license to do it. So that's kind of nice. But yeah, so there's my bittersweet, heartbreaking story, and makes me feel like a complete failure sometimes. That was the main feeling I had as I was dealing with that, is I feel like a failure, absolute yeah. failure. So
that's understandable.
But
yeah. But I mean, and a lot of people think, you know, you wasted an animal, but the way I look at it is other things got to eat too.
Yeah.
So it's not like that animal just goes 100% to waste. It turns into food for 1,000 other things. And then, you know, it does its part in nature.
I saw a post today of a guy that pulled an arrow out of he shot a bull. I don't even know what state, but pulled an arrow out of it and said to the idiot, blah, blah, blah. Shot placement, you need to know shot placement. And the comments were just, they just ripped him to shreds. Like, you don't know the situation.
Yeah.
You don't know what happened. And
so,
too bad we're not all as good as you are, and blah, blah, blah. Just ripped him apart. It was kind of funny.
There's to your episode, I would say 2 episodes ago. No, I think it's the most recent one you did on trophy hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about the I Hunt Colorado page and some of the comments and stuff that come through there. I have a bigger page and I deal with comments like that regularly. You know, I'll post something for somebody and it's just, they sit there and open up on each other and I don't understand it. Like, we are all here as one community. Why the heck are we just sitting here putting each other down?
Right.
I don't get it. And then I get messages and I'll get DMs of this person talking junk about, well, why would they shoot that small? Let it happen. Stop attacking people.
Right.
And I've gotten to the point where when I sit there and I start seeing these trash talking posts, I'm going off on a rant now. I'm sorry, but no, I see these comments in these posts, and I'll start deleting them. And people will get pissed off, and they'll message me, "Why did you delete my comment?" And I'm like, "This isn't the time or place. If you want to have a problem with that guy, message him independently, and have a conversation with him. You don't need to be blasting it on here. That's not what HuntAZ page is about. It's about a community coming together. This is a page for you guys." For everybody, anybody, it represents the hunters of Arizona. So why are we and just down talking because it doesn't fit your standards of an animal or your quality that you chase?
I've been kind of sharing that as a for those people joining this community. You're not joining the Republican or Democratic Party, which is the majority. It's not like it's not 50-50, but say 50-50 of the nation. You're joining a community that's 6% of the nation. And that 6%, when you divide it, you got 3%. So when you're really hurting yourself, we're already the minority. So the minority can't have division within the minority. You're just not going to get anywhere. And I love what Clay Newcomb says. He talks about guard the gate. And I know a lot of people don't care about trapping and they don't care about maybe trail cameras, but
yeah, that's what we're facing here is that trail camera ban.
You don't know if it's trail cameras today or if it's archery hunting tomorrow or it's hunting with hounds in this state and bear hunting in this state. If
this issue doesn't affect you now, that's fine. But you still have to stand up for it because someday one of the things that you do as an outdoorsman is going to get attacked.
Absolutely.
You're going to have your back against a wall and then you might lose that battle and then you're pissed off because not enough people voted for it because it doesn't affect them. Well, you were in those shoes. It always affects you. Whether you do that style of hunting, whether you hunt with trail or you use trail cameras or you hunt with hounds, in some way it affects you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. I'm sitting here. My brain is running through it right now. And there's that. And I mean, you know, I get the messages from those people, the messages from the antis. I'm sitting here like I could go off all day for this, the way people display their animals, have some courtesy. Not everybody needs to see that. Try to clean it up a little bit. Try not to give the anti-hunters or the people attacking us the ammo to come attack us more and use their own photos against us. Yeah. But I'm not going off anymore. I'm sorry. No, I could go off. That's a whole nother episode. Call me up when you want to do another one.
Yep. And we'll revisit trophy hunting again.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more I didn't even touch with that. But
yeah.
Yeah. So anything else we need to talk about or?
No, that was a wild weekend, man. I'm sorry that your elk hunt turned out the way it did.
Yeah. And I just walked in the office today of talked to a guy that in South Dakota drew his bull tag, 14, 15 years. I think it took him for archery bull and either lost it or completely missed it. He doesn't even know. So no blood, no arrow, no. He kind of walked off and joined his cow. So I chatted with him a little bit today. He's like, he's in the exact same position I was on Tuesday. Didn't know quite what to do. He's like, because I asked him, like, what now? He's like, I don't know. I really don't know. And you feel bad about it too there with a tag that takes 14 years. Mine was over the counter. A tag that takes 14 years. Now I got a little bit more pressure of, well, I don't get to do this again in my lifetime because there's a 9-year waiting period plus 14. Oh, wow. So myself, I'm going to get one bull in color in South Dakota. That's all I'll ever get, because I had to start over with my points as soon as I moved here. So let's say a little point creep 20 years from now, 9-year waiting period. I'm soon now 64.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait.
So those numbers, is that kind of standard around this state, or how does that? I'm at 8 or 9 years now, and you know, there's a guy I hunt with. I think he's pushing. He's a resident, and I think he's pushing 16 or 17 points. Non-resident, you're looking 20 plus. I would say. I mean, you might get lucky and draw sooner than that, but some units you can draw an elk tag here with single-digit numbers.
No, it's there's only like 9 units. They only manage the elk in the Black Hills area. We've got prairie elk units as well, kind of like Nebraska stuff, but it's those are managed based on tolerance of landowners tolerating damage that they cause. So, but okay, in general, 17 years is the average for when you draw that. So there's no gimme units. There's no 5, 6, 7 year units. It's pretty straight across the board, average of 17. And you could pick up some cow tags every few years if you wanted to, but
yeah.
And I may do that in the future, but yeah,
it's a long time. It sounds like that sucks for that guy that you're talking about, you know, now he's at that waiting. He's waited that long, and now he's not sure if he stuck a bull or what to do from here.
Yeah. And our residents definitely, I've seen some folks complain about, we never get a chance to shoot our bulls. Like, well, we got 7,500 elk in this state for 800,000 people is how we don't even have 1 million people are in the state, but, probably pretty close somewhere in there, but with everyone moving here, but, they complain about, I'm never going to get one, never going to get one. Well, this is not this whole state is like a trophy state.
Yeah.
The you have to look at it like that. If you want to go hunt elk every year, you got to go to another state. That's just the way it is.
Yep.
And are you just going to have one elk hunt in your life? You'll never learn anything about elk hunting if you hunt once every 25 years.
And you're probably not going to be successful. I mean, you're just taking one. I mean, you may, but.
Well, I'm going to, I said this today and I could get just totally reamed for it, but I'm not going to say it to anybody that's actually been hunting in South Dakota, but I want to guess that our elk are just that much easier to hunt. I'm going to throw that out there because
somebody will get you for it.
I know, but I want to know if that's the truth or not, but just because our success rate across the board is 80%, and I just see some of these people that are harvesting, and I hear some of the stories, and like, why was that bull not spooked? Why was that not spooked? My buddy was driving down the road the other day off of a major highway, and they're standing off the side there bugling 100 yards away. And these bulls are definitely not pressured the same. So,
yeah.
But anyway, I'm sure they still have plenty of their regular instinct to them that makes them wild, but I don't know. Maybe they're not the typical hunted like crazy, know what a bugle is and shut up and like every bull in Colorado. So
yeah, well, those Colorado bulls, they hear every different sound and type of bugle, everything from the sound of a dying cat to an actual nice sounding experienced elk caller. So
yeah, exactly. Well, I can let you go. We can wrap this up and probably get to bed. So, but anyway, I appreciate you chatting with me a little bit and letting me tell a story with the, not to myself.
Yeah. It makes it a little better to be able to talk to somebody else.
Again, another little plug for Hunt AZ on Instagram. So go check them out. And there's always fun to see. I haven't ever hunted Arizona. Not yet. Will be. But it's fun to see the big bulls and big bucks that come out of there, and the coos deer for sure, because they don't get to. It's nice to get some eyes on some coos deer, just see what people are shooting. So go check them out. All right, Ryan. Well, we'll talk soon.
Yeah, we'll talk to you later. Thanks, Clint.
This is God's country.